Fred Kaplan is a Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and author of the new book, The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. Fred Kaplan broke the news of Paula Broadwell's involvement in Petraeus' resignation from the CIA in his War Stories column in Slate. Now he draws on secret documents, private emails, and extensive interviews with more than 100 key players, including Petraeus, to deliver many newsmaking revelations. The Insurgents is the inside story of the small group of soldier scholars led by Petraeus who plotted to change the American military from within. This is a story of power, politics, ideas, and personalities, and how they converge to reshape the 21st century American military. It is a pleasure to welcome Fred Kaplan to the program this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
What brought you to looking in such detail to the life of and ultimately the career of David Petraeus?
Well, you know, it's not just Petraeus. It's this whole group of, of young officers who came up in the 80s and 90s and were dissatisfied with the way their generals were defining war, much less fighting it. But I about 30 years ago, I wrote a book called The Wizards of Armageddon, which was about the small group of intellectuals at the RAND Corporation who invented nuclear deterrence strategy. And as I started reporting about Petraeus and this new generation of officers, 10 years ago, and got to know some of them pretty well, I realized that, hey, this is another very similar story about a group of intellectual army officers, most of whom came out of the social science department at West Point, who were reviving this ancient doctrine of counterinsurgency warfare. And curiously, a lot of these generals had read Wizards of Armageddon when they were in graduate school or the academy, and so they were all quite willing to cooperate with me on this venture.
Give us a sense of just the subtitle of the book, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War, of using that word plot, because we often think of that as having a negative connotation.
Right. Well, I call it a plot because they call it a plot. This group, they referred to themselves as the Cabal, or the West Point Mafia. There was a concerted and quite deliberate, conscious effort to join forces to change the American way of war. Now, you know, what does that mean? This is really something that most people, it's kind of hard to believe, that before David Petraeus became the commander in Iraq, in other words, as recently as 2006, the United States Army defined war as major combat operations, you know, tank against tank, major foe against major foe on some large battlefield. Conflicts like against insurgents or terrorists, things like that, those were called, and this was in capital letters, military operations other than war. It wasn't even a war. So, you know, this group of officers, including Petraeus, who came up in the 80s and early 90s, where were they deployed? They were sent to El Salvador, Haiti, Somalia, Bosnia. Their commanders were not even calling this war. They were saying it wasn't war. Well, it felt like war to them, and they also had the perception that this was the kind of conflict that the United States was going to be facing in the years to come. The Army not only had no doctrine on how to deal with these wars, but had no doctrine that recognized that this was a different kind of conflict, requiring a different kind of strategy, different kind of training, a different kind of promotion system with the officers to make sure that people who were aware of these kinds of conflicts rose to the top. And that is the kind of revolution from within that this group of intellectual officers that I write about literally plotted to achieve.
You write that it was not David Petraeus who instigated the plot. It did not begin with him, but he certainly did emerge as the ringleader. There was a time when he organized a conference in Vermont and invited everyone that he could think of who'd written anything interesting about counterinsurgency, and as you say, the ringleader, bringing this all together.
Right. Well, he wasn't the one who organized the conference in Vermont. There was a very intelligent...
Elliot Cohen.
Professor of, yeah, Elliot Cohen, a professor of strategic studies at School of Advanced International Studies in Washington. He'd studied the history of warfare. He was a member of the Defense Policy Board, an advisory group to the Secretary of Defense. He was the only one who went over to Iraq. He saw that the commanders didn't know what was going on, had no way of dealing with it. Meanwhile, his son, who like him had gone to Harvard and enlisted in the Army and was about to go over to become an infantry soldier there, and he was upset that this war, which, by the way, he had supported and, in fact, had urged, was being screwed up by the Bush administration and by the Army commander. So he called together this conference at Basin Harbor, Vermont, and as you said, he just pulled together everybody who had written an interesting article about counterinsurgency doctrine. And the interesting thing is that it met for 5 days, and most of these people did not know of each other's existence before this conference met. They thought they were out in the wilderness doing their own thing, carving their own path, nobody listening. And so they were all intrigued that, oh, my God, there's a community. I'm a member of a community. There are other people like me who are thinking in this same way. And they came out of this conference energized to go back and try to do something about this. Meanwhile, David Petraeus, around this time, had just come back from Iraq to be the commander of something called the Combined Arms Center at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, which, far from being the backwater that he thought it was going to be, turned out to be sort of the intellectual center of the Army, with control over doctrine, training, education of officers. And so he learned about this other group that was forming, and he had come to similar conclusions from his own endeavors and his own studies. And so he organized a conference at Leavenworth to write a new Army field manual on counterinsurgency, something that would be read by the officers, that would have the imprimatur of official doctrine, so that when he went back to Iraq to be commander, he would have that as his own self-written marching orders of what to do.
Because it came off, I mean, as you write about it in the book, it came off more as a manifesto than it did as an ordinary field manual.
That's right. A field manual, you know, most people don't know what a field manual is, and there's no reason to. It's kind of a how-to manual. You know, if a commander finds himself fighting a tank battle, there's a field manual on how to do this. Or, you know, joint operations of infantry and artillery, there's a field manual on how to do this. Well, there hadn't been a field manual on counterinsurgency for 20 years because the Army didn't want to fight it. They didn't want to fight it because, you know, they defined war, as I said. They called it military operations other than war. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the early 90s said, real men don't do MOOTWA. MOOTWA standing for military operations other than war. They didn't want to do it. So this field manual, not only was it a how-to manual, but yeah, it was a manifesto. It was a change of strategy. And it was written outside of the normal channels. It was written by Petraeus and this group of intellectuals that he brought in. And in fact, it faced tremendous resistance from other branches of the Army. He had to pull some very deft bureaucratic moves to get the thing through the bureaucracy. The thing about Petraeus, he had a lot of admirers among his acolytes, but a lot of people in the traditional Army really didn't like him because the Army at the time, and to some extent this is still the case, but a much lesser extent, they didn't like people who were bookish or who stood out much. Mm. And Petraeus was very guilty on both counts.
You know, I read the book and I kept on, and obviously I read it knowing what happened to him, you know, knowing about the downfall. And so you know that going in, reading to it. And you keep on looking, or at least I did, for hints of something. Mm-hmm. But at the end, you sort of think, wow, you know, this came off as it doesn't fit the character. It seems very out of character and a bit of a surprise. From what I've understood of what you've read, it was a surprise to you as well.
Well, it was a surprise, but I do have a final postscript that I was able to tack on at the last minute.
Right.
And I think I do weave it into the theme. Here's the thing about David Petraeus in this sense. I mean, broadly speaking, I've never met an unassuming four-star general. And I think that if such a creature exists, he's probably a lousy general. But Petraeus took this to a new level. I mean, when Petraeus was commander of Iraq, he created this entity called the Sons of Iraq, which really turned a lot of things around. He basically recruited Sunni militants who had been fighting against Americans just weeks earlier, but who had become disgusted with the foreign jihadists with whom they'd been allied. He recruited them to join the American fight against the jihadists, and he called it the Sons of Iraq. He paid them to join. He paid them a regular salary out of his commander's discretionary fund, you know, which is usually was used to, you know, pay people to sweep the streets or something like that. He did this without informing anybody in Washington, because he figured that if they'd known, they probably wouldn't have gone for this. There are lots of examples where he did this kind of thing, working on his own set of rules. You know, in military terms, a lot of these things were successful. But I think, given that four-star generals kind of have their own life anyway, and given, I think, once you start doing three or four or five of these things totally off the wall and out of anyone's purview, and you think you can get away with just about anything, I think this begins to have an effect on your other, the other part of your life as well.
We have about a minute left, and I'm curious as to, in this plot to change the American way of war, given the downfall, given what has happened, and given the reluctance by many to embrace this in the first place, what do you think will be, is there anything long-lasting in what he did that will be with us, do you think, for a while, a legacy, if you will, of the Petraeus era?
Well, a much bigger downfall in terms of this story than his dalliance with Paula Broadwell was the failure of Afghanistan.
Yeah.
That was a case of where the revolution becomes calcified, where a creative idea turns into a dogma. And in Afghanistan, the kinds of conditions that existed in Iraq that made the application of these theories plausible did not exist at all, and yet he went ahead with this war and convinced people that he could pull off miracles because he was a miracle worker. So the downfall of this idea will stem more directly from its failure on one scene. I think, though, what we are left with is a positive legacy, is that the Army is now a much more flexible operation. I don't think that anytime soon any general will define something like this kind of war as not a war. But, you know, there is an existential crisis facing the Army right now. There are no major foes for land Army right now. Nobody wants to fight something like Afghanistan or Iraq ever again, at least for the next 20 years. The small stuff, you know, these things with Yemen and Somalia that you read about, those are special forces. So what is the Army about? What is its mission? And that's a crisis that the generals are facing now.
The name of the book is The Insurgents, David Petraeus and the Plot to Change the American Way of War. It is published by Simon & Schuster. Fred Kaplan, I thank you very much for sharing your knowledge with us. A great pleasure.
Well, thank you.
Have a great weekend. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.